tube, then sorting out the Daily Mail. Nasty habit. Read the horoscope, pick the skin around.
And I'm not going to put a lot of preamble on this. That song you're hearing right now is called Feeling Peaky by Sleeper, from the 1996 work of pure genius called The It Girl. This is Theme Party. It's 9 o'clock. Kill Radio, killradio.org. You can come to killradio.org every day and listen to tons and tons of good shows, including the one you're listening to right now, which is Theme Party. I'd like to encourage you to check out Kill Radio's archives, where you can find, amongst other shows, the one you're listening to right now. Again, which is Theme Party. Tonight, we don't really have much of a theme. It's Mozart's birthday, and Kiss My Fist is at an orchestral concert, so I'm just going to wing it. We're going to have people in the studio later. I'm probably going to drink some beer. Right now, I'm drinking an energy drink. It's very delicious, by the way, if anyone cares. I am wearing a sweater vest and a tie, looking pretty dapper. And if anyone wants to know, I'm riding the scooter again for the first time in about a month, and it's awesome. And I highly recommend that every single person out there go and purchase a scooter. And with that, here's some more Sleeper. I want to promise you that tonight you're going to hear lots and lots and lots and lots of smooth, smooth 70s rock. That is all. Now that's how you DJ, people. Accidentally start the second song and press the play button twice, just in case you were curious. Oh, but here's the song now. And if you're curious, it's Sparks. The song is called Number One Song in Heaven.
That I'd always remember. I said to my man, stop the Jeep. She's only 17, but yo, don't sleep. I kicked the base like an NFL punter and scoped the booty like a big game hunter. I said to the girl, yo, you look tired. Let's go get some rest, relax by the fire. I put the big booty on the Baskin rug. She gave me a kiss, I gave her a hug. I said to the girl, them young boys ain't nothing. You wanna get freaky, let me kiss your belly button. I circled it and teased it and made a squeal. Grabbed a pack of bullets and pulled out the steel. When I was through, I wiped the sweat from my eyes. Went to the kitchen and got some sweet potato pies. Tina busted in my house while I was eating. You know what I said? Too bad you caught me cheating, but Brenda got a big old butt. I know I told you I'd be true, but Brenda got a big old butt. So I'm leaving you. Brenda got a big old butt. I know I told you I'd be true, but Brenda got a big old butt. So I'm leaving you. I went to Red Lobster for shrimp and steak around the time when the waitresses are on their lunch break. I pulled in the parking lot, parked my car. Somebody shouted out, I don't care who you are. I paid it no attention, I walked aside. Cause Brian had a 9 and he was chilling in the ride. I walked in the place, everybody was looking. And shrimp and steak wasn't the only thing cooking. I sat down to eat, ordered my food. I said to the waitress, I don't mean to be rude, but I'll take you on a platter. She said, you got a girl. I said, it don't matter. You look like you're tastier than piping hot pizza. What's your name? She said, my tag says Lisa. I said, okay, you're smart and all that, but when you get off work, yo, I'll be back. She looked at me and said, make yourself clear. L, where we going? I said, right here. She looked kinda puzzled. I said, you'll see. I pulled up at 10 on the DOT. When she walked out the door, I threw my tongue down her throat. Pushed her back aside and pulled off her coat. Laid her on the table and placed my order and gave her a tip much bigger than a quarter. On and on till the break of dawn. All over the restaurant, word is born. I heard somebody coughing. I checked my watch. I couldn't believe it said 9 o'clock. I grabbed my pants, put on my Kango. Who did I see? Oh, yo, it was Brenda. Yo, she worked at Red Lobster, but I didn't remember. Lisa got a big old butt. I know I told you I'd be true, but Lisa got a big old butt, so I'm leaving you. See ya. Lisa got a big old butt. I know I told you I'd be true, but Lisa got
got a big old butt. So I'm leaving you.
See ya!
Illustrious Michael McDonald. I just wanted to have a moment of silence so we could bask in the glory of This Is It, which I love. Actually, that was Kenny Loggins with Michael McDonald, the song This Is It. And you can always recognize with Michael McDonald because there's always a piano line that's like doop doop doot doot, and then he does his Michael McDonald thing, was like, don't take that off. Yeah, anyway, hi. So I'm here almost by myself. I've only got two more people in the studio with me. DJ JetBlue is here.
Hey there, Ross.
And she brought her cousin. Cousin, what's your name?
Cousin JJ.
And I, of course, am Ross, the eligible Ross Lincoln. Doesn't feel right without the rest of Theme Party here in the studio with me. I don't know where they are, but Kiss My Fist can't be here tonight because she's at a concert. She plays violin in an orchestra, so she is currently orchestrating, I suppose. They're probably going on right now. Afterwards, she's having a party at her house. In case anybody who is listening knows where she lives, you should go there immediately. Let's talk about what we listened to. We'll do that. Kenny Loggins, This Is It, is the song you just heard, as I said. Before that, a man I like to call LL Cool J, from the album Walking with the Panther. The song is Big Ol' Butt, which I actually credit with starting the trend in hip-hop music of talking about big butts. It actually predates Baby Got Back by about 2 or 3 years, I think, because Walking with the Panther came out when I was still in junior high, and Baby Got Back came out when I was a senior in high school, so I am actually 80 years old. Sparks?
Before but honors to Baby Got Back for making women feel good everywhere.
True, but you know that song was really controversial when it came out? Like, really, because it came out, like, right towards the end of what people, when people think of, like, you know, PC, the golden age of that whole thing was, like, the late 80s and the early 90s. And while there were, the PC movement was, this is the dumbest phrase ever, but the whole PC thing was, you know, reacting against some very legitimate problems, especially like a ton of misogyny and homophobia, and the casually accepted in 80s rock and 80s music in general and 80s culture. And the Reagan years, of course, were just horrible. But they were a little too influenced by like 70s liberalism. And as a result, it was very annoying. And everything was controversial. So Baby Got Back came out, and it was extremely, it was one, you know, and it, the video is ridiculous because he's standing on top of a mountain shaped like a butt, and there are like dancing girls shaking it. But yeah, I agree with you. I think overall it's a perfectly hilarious and wonderful song. And really, you know, it's a tribute to the ladies with some thickness on their body, which I think we can all get behind. I know I can get behind. Yeah!
And it also makes fun of pretzel models, which I like.
Absolutely. And we opened the show. Oh, the before LL Cool J Big Ol' Butt, we heard Sparks. The band Sparks is not affiliated with the Energy Beer, but you know, kudos to the Energy Beer for naming themselves somewhat similar to the band. The band is actually don't have the Wikipedia up in front of me. I'd tell you all about them, but basically they formed in the 70s and they've gone through many changes. It's always been the two main guys, two brothers, who have been the songwriting team behind everything they've ever done. And they've done everything from like, you know, piano bar glam rock kind of stuff to 80s electro pop to like cabaret and chamber music, and I played something from their 1999 album called Plagiarism, which are basically like reworkings of older songs, most of them done more chamber music style, but that was a remix of their song from the 80s called Number One Song in Heaven that was remixed by Jimmy Somerville. Jimmy Somerville was a big electropop guy in the 80s. He was in the Communards, amongst other projects. And we opened it up with a group called Sleeper, who have since broken up. Sleeper were a big Britpop band. Big is relative. Sleeper were a Britpop band in the mid-90s. Their first album sort of sounded like what was the name of that band? Damon Albarn's girlfriend. The song was... I should know the name of the band. Because Justine Frischman, Elastica. That was the name of the band. They sort of sounded like that. Their second album was much more influenced by Blur, and that was what you heard that song from. The song was called Feeling Peaky. It's the first song from the album The It Girl. And I highly recommend that album. Not only is like a really great snapshot of what British music sounded like circa 1995 and 96, but also because it's a great album in its own right, and it didn't really sell well when it came out, and they only had one album after that, and then they broke up. And the lead singer, Louise Werner, was actually a really funny person. Like, she would say things just to kind of piss people off, and she I think sort of wanted to be the female Liam Gallagher, and the way that like the Gallagher brothers from Oasis would just say anything and insult anybody that came to their mind and just talk shit on everybody, and it made for a lot more interesting press than, you know, the fucking rah-rah celebration that American bands tend to be, where American bands won't talk shit on each other and American bands hang out together. And you know, I knew that REM was over when Michael Stipe became very close friends with Courtney Love in the wake of Kurt Cobain's death. And I'm sorry, she's a horrible, wretched monster.
Yes, she is.
Oh, hey, dude.
Hey, how's it going?
Have a seat.
Hello. Oh, I'm
stepping
in.
Oh, okay. Word. Then don't step in.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks,
Yeah, okay, well, I thought we were going to have someone else in the story, but we don't, so fuck him.
Fuck me.
That's right. So my point is that I prefer the English music scene where bands talk shit on each other all the time. Although I do hate the fact that everybody in that country snorts a mountain of blow, regardless of who they are. It's just pretty depressing and generic, if you think about it. It's a big cliche, and you'd expect them to be a little more above that, but they're not. Actually, you know what? What's weird is I even asked some Swedish friend of mine and a couple of people from France about this, and everyone agrees that English people are the most crazy-ass, like, drug-swilling nightmares in the entire world.
I know some English people that live here, and they are definitely not like that at all.
It's very rare, though. The ones that come here, I think, are
trying to get away from that horrible scene.
Possibly.
That might be the big cities in England, too, not necessarily, like, out in the countryside.
Well, certainly, but, you know, England's like America, right? There's not really a lot of countryside. And I wonder if the countryside in England's the same, because in America, the countryside's where all the drugs are. Like, the fucking meth problem is, you know, L.A.'s a meth town, but...
Actually, England's mostly countryside. It's like London.
Well, yeah, but most of the people in England live in, like, the major cities, though? I mean, it's not like... I mean, the vast majority of people are urban dwellers, or at least suburban dwellers. It's not like they're, like, rural farm people, as far as I know. Maybe I'm wrong.
I don't know. You well, live there, JJ.
Boroughs, and I would say that... Oh. They have lots of boroughs.
Yeah.
I would say that it's a little bit of both, I think.
Right. Well, what was your experience? Do you think that it was the city thing, or did you find that people in the countryside were also quite proficient in the art of gobbling ecstasy in heroic amounts?
See, I actually lived in London, but I never really had a chance to experience the countryside, so couldn't tell you much about that. But
right.
I don't know, it's pretty fast-paced.
Yeah, which is weird, too, because England is a very slow-paced country in almost every other way.
Right.
You know, you have to wait in line for everything. You can't go to the bathroom anywhere because nobody... allows you to use their bathrooms even when you're a customer, and English people just don't mind waiting. Like, we refuse to wait for anything. I'm not really going anywhere with this, so I'll go back to the original point, which is that I've always considered I myself a rather mediocre when it comes to, like, my drug history. Though when I have talked to people, like, despite the fact that in, like, enclaves like New York and LA or whatever, where people have just gobbled drugs or whatever, for the most part, I think Americans are kind of tame in that regard. So for the most part, I have done more drugs than most of the people I know, at least outside of Los Angeles. I haven't done drugs in years. Not that I'm, don't do drugs, kid. But the point is, I have long since not done drugs at all, mostly because of my mind. I like it to sort of be focused. And beer is good, though. I like scotch, too. But the point is, and not that I'm making a distinction, but the point is, I had often been amused at, like, how much, because I'd known people in Tulsa. Tulsa's one of those towns where people are just doing a shitload of drugs just to forget, or drinking too much. But I'd known so many people that had such serious drug problems that when I got older, I just sort of considered myself to be more of a dabbler of sorts. You know what I mean? Like, well, you know, the worst that you could really say about it is, if you're listening, Mom and Dad, I would recommend turning off the radio right now. Anyway, I did a lot of acid, but other than that, it really, you know, wasn't that big of a deal. But talking to people, and you realize most people have not really done that much. I went to England, and it was though I had come from a Mormon, like, community that was married to an Amish community with nothing and no community. That was how you compare me to what I saw in England. I was there for, like, 2 weeks, and it was just the most insane, like, guzzling everything that you could possibly get your hands on. I did not participate by that point. I drank a lot. My God.
We drink a lot more alcohol than anyone in Europe.
No, not more than England. English people make Americans look like prohibitionists circa 1900.
Right after work, they're standing outside that pub with
beer. They go to the pub at lunchtime.
Uh-huh.
They come back from work drunk.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's all about them.
Yeah, and they because all the pubs, at least until very, very recently, had to close at 11 o'clock, they would just be slamming drinks down as soon as they got off work. And they finally relaxed the law that said that pubs can be open past 11 o'clock. I found out that apparently the reason that the pubs had to close at 11 is because it was a way to keep those shiftless layabout workers from causing social problems. It was like a weird class thing, but now it's legal for pubs to stay open late, and... that's apparently supposed to cure the problem of late-night subway riders drunk as hell, causing trouble and puking all over all at once, everyone spilling out into the streets. Whether it'll work or not, I don't know. I kind of like the idea of the bar being forced to close at 11 because you kind of, like... Because in America, at least in L.A., you do not even leave your house to go out at night. until like 10 or 10:30. Mm-hmm. Maybe. I mean, and even then, if you like there's someone throws a party and you show up before 11:30, you feel like you've gotten there just way too early. No. Yeah, midnight. That's about the time you want to show up at a party. Even on New Year's Eve, you don't want to get to a party any earlier than 11 o'clock. It's very weird. And it's like that pretty much everywhere I've ever lived. In England, everything starts at like 7. Like if someone throws a party, you get there at 8 o'clock.
That sounds like more my schedule.
Right, but that's just...
You've got to work in the morning.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I mean, they drink like crazy and then they get home by midnight and they still get like, you know, 6 or 7 hours of sleep in, hopefully. If the bar closes at 11, they'll be kind of sobered up possibly by the time they get home. And yeah. Sober enough that when they go to sleep, they'll... Anyway, point is, back to the moment. If Louise Werner from Sleeper wanted to be like the Liam Gallagher. And this gets me back to my original point. Hooray! Yes. ADDD is conquered. The point is, British bands will talk shit on each other. And if a British band doesn't like another band, they will say so. And sometimes bands are real dicks about it, and sometimes they aren't. But you know what? I always thought it was kind of funny that Robert Smith and Morrissey hated each other. Like, they would diss each other. Robert Smith thought... This is ironic. Robert Smith thought Morrissey was a whiner. And Morrissey thought Robert Smith was ridiculously foppy. And that... Yeah, I know. That's like the pot calling the kettle gay, if you ask me. Yeah! But it was nice to know that even in a music scene you'd think would get along, there was still, like... Bands willing to state unequivocally that they're not into someone, but fucking American magazines, it's like every time you get the chance, it's like Kanye West is like, I really like System of a Down. Like, why can't Kanye West just hate metal? And why is it whenever you have like somebody in hip hop who likes music outside of hip hop, they're always like the worst example of it? Like, Kanye West wasn't like, oh, I really like the Boy Least Likely too, and I think AC/DC is great. I really like, I'm trying to think of some band that's just like the White Stripes, you know, from 3 years ago would have been a much more Polyphonic Spree, we'll say that band, or the Most Serene Republic, like some underground band, because like whenever like you have like indie rock guys that also like hip hop, they also like underground hip hop, right? But you never see like, you very rarely see like somebody from like the like respectable part of the rock world who's gonna be like, I like crunk, you know, like seriously. And I just wonder why that is, although I think my theory... I'm really talking a lot. I'm sorry. My theory would be that rock and roll is a dying art form and has been dying for 20 years, and now it's in a phase where all... And there's an ambulance and a fire truck. Ladies and gentlemen, that is the sound of the city. The hard streets of L.A. Every street corner tells a story, and this street corner tells the story of very loud trucks. So, let's talk. JJ, why don't you tell us about yourself? What do you do? What's your thing?
Well, I'm a music buff. I'm an absolute lover of music, all different types of music. I've been singing opera since I was about 16 years old.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And I just decided to start working with a producer. So we're working on a collaboration project, and we're going to fuse opera and pop together to create a new sound, a new genre.
That's, you know, do you ever listen to bands like the Left Banc or the Zombies or like mid-60s Beatles kind of sound like this? Like, there's this thing in the 60s called Baroque pop, which was kind of a weird thing to call it because there's absolutely no Baroque elements whatsoever to it. But for those of you who don't know, Baroque music is typified by mathematical counterpoint and an extreme emphasis on symmetry and organization in the musical structure, as opposed to the Romantic era, which... threw that out in favor of melody and emotional power. But anyway, point is, they called it Baroque pop because it made it... But the whole point was to mix like classical elements with like pop music.
Right, like a fusion.
Yeah. I'd be really interested in seeing what you do with it. Do you have anything recorded by any chance?
We're actually in the process of doing it right now.
So. Awesome. What instruments do you play?
I play guitar, a little bit of piano, but mostly guitar.
So... Do you sing and play guitar? Do you play acoustic guitar, electric guitar? What do you do?
I like acoustic, and sometimes I like to jam out with an electric. Yeah.
When you, you talk about basically combining, when you say pop music, what do you mean? Like, what are you thinking of when you're taking like opera elements? And I guess I should also ask you, define opera elements. Do you mean like tragic opera? Do you mean light comic operas like Gilbert and Sullivan? Do you
have? No, it would definitely be tragic.
Right.
Very dark. And like Evanescence, like that type of sound.
Right.
You know, she's got that beautiful voice with the hard edge. And
yeah. I wish I liked their music better, but I do like her voice just fine.
Yeah, she's a beautiful voice.
Yeah. And she's kind of cute, too.
She is.
Didn't say, in case my girlfriend's listening. No. Hello. We've got an IM coming in. Okay. Apparently, DTJ Real EMC just said he'd think he just took a shit. So that's pretty fantastic. Thank you for sharing that with me. I do want to say, for all of you out there, you know, actually, DTJ Real EMC, I want to apologize, because in a second, you're not going to be... okay, great. Theme Party Radio is, in fact, connected. Great. If you're listening... You can communicate with us on our AOL Instant Messenger. Theme Party Radio is how you communicate with us. Although I think DTJ Real EMC, who just took a shit, he thinks.
Yes.
Might be on contacting Kill Radio. I really don't.
I'm hoping that means that he was just very excited.
Yeah. Me too. That's just the weirdest thing I've ever heard of. Okay, so putting you on the spot. You don't have anything with you this week, so I won't ask you to sing or anything like that. But next time you come by, you should bring your acoustic guitar with you.
Absolutely.
Yes. We do like to have people record or people play on the show. And let me ask you a favor. A question. If you had to pick some operas that you would recommend that influenced you, because you say you sang opera. So what were your favorites? What did you perform in and what do you like the best?
Well, I did a couple of scenes in college. College scenes. It was from Mozart, actually. From La Nozio di Figaro, and
is that the Marriage of Figaro?
Yes, yes.
Figaro. I only know that because of Warner Brothers cartoons. You know, the one where it's like la 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 la
la la la la la la la la.
Yeah, Figaro. Yeah, that. I just know it says Figaro a whole lot.
I love anything from Mozart. Yeah. Mozart rocks.
Mozart's birthday is today.
Happy birthday, Woo-hoo, Mozart.
Happy birthday, Mozart.
Thanks, Mozart. Thank you for rocking hard as you possibly can. Okay, so continue.
Favorite operas. I think the most inspiring person in opera would be Maria Callas. I mean, anything that she sings, performs, she just is so moving. And the thing about her, it's not like she has the most beautiful sound, but there's just something about her that really... connects with humanity, or it's just it's a beautiful thing. And if I were to recommend an opera, I love Madame Butterfly.
Oh, that is very good.
Yeah, and La Boheme.
I like the main La Boheme. That mm-hmm. I do like that would be the overture, right?
Yeah,
I do like that. I actually am not as familiar with La Boheme as I should be, but I've heard a lot of the songs, and of course the songs have been covered billions of times,
right?
So I really like what I've heard. I will actually have to watch this at some point, although I know it's been told a billion times. It's, you know, a bunch of people at the dregs of society who are all...
Because you're such a huge fan of Rent.
Yeah, Rent can lick me. That's no,
you
no,
don't
it
like
can't.
Rent?
I despise Rent. I
oh,
think Rent
no.
is the absolute worst example of what I hate about modern American music. It's some douchebag who clearly has never listened to rock ever or any popular music. But he hears, like, some kids humming, and he thinks, anyone can do that. It's like Andrew Lloyd Webber, who apparently heard a rock song at one point and thought that he could just write it because it's apparently really easy. You know what I'll compare it to is in the 1980s, there was this Twister commercial, you know, the game Twister?
Uh-huh.
And they decided the kids like rap music. Like, let's do a rap about Twister. And so they did do a rap about Twister, and it's like, everybody's chilling with the Twister, Twister, and everyone is illin' with the Twister. It's... Whoa. Yeah, I'm blowing up. I'll call you back, Josh. The point is, before I call Josh back, I do want to say that Rent... That's what Rent feels like to me. Like, it just feels like some guy that doesn't actually listen that much to pop music. And plus, I hate the songs. I hate them so much. Seasons of Love is like a herpes wart on top of an abscessed tooth. Implanted into your ear.
That is pretty harsh.
It's not. No. I'm being charitable to Rent. Rent is literally like, no offense, because I'm going to be very, very cruel to anyone who's listening. Obviously, I don't mean you. However, Rent is how mediocre people get to. Rent is the kind of thing that makes mediocre people feel like they have interesting taste. You know, kind of like Matchbox 20. How
well, that's true.
People will listen to Matchbox 20 like, Rob Thompson's got really, he's just a great lyricist, man, and he's so emotional and powerful. And it's like he doesn't say anything, and his melodies are derivative. And what's worse is they're not even derivative; they're like overthought. You know, like he can't actually come up with a memorable melody, so he just combines notes on top of other notes until you have this like do 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 do. Oh, and I hate his voice so much, and I hate how like it's like Rent also. Is really popular with people who don't actually know about musical theater very much.
I agree with that. I think it's not a musical, really. If to like it for the music as something outside of the musical
theater
world...
Something I can't understand, by the way.
...is totally fine. And I think that's why a lot of people who don't like musical theater like Rent. Personally, I like Rent because I like different kinds of music. But...
I like lots of different kinds of music.
I know you do.
I think the music in Rent is shit. No, it's okay. We're still
Rent.
Down.
I know we are. But I agree that a lot of people outside of the musical theater world, and that it's not a musical. Like, I see Rent and saw Rent and said that's not musical theater music at all.
Well, it's like, I think that you could do, like, you could take, like, contemporary forms of music, because, like, all musicals did at the height of musical theater in the 50s and 60s was, well, it, certainly in the 50s and 40s, were basically taking, like, jazz and early popular music styles and incorporating them into, you know, what had essentially been like the bastardized form of like comic opera, right? I mean, and they did a lot of really good jobs. A lot of the best standards of the 20th century came out of musical theater. It doesn't mean that you have to always write in the style of The Music Man or West Side Story, or, you know, name musical. I'm not going to say South Pacific.
There should be a feeling to the music that's different from regular music that you'd hear every day on the radio.
I do agree there. I certainly think, I think maybe what it... how do I put this? Okay, it feels like every time a musical comes out now, it's a commentary on musicals, actually, rather than actually a serious musical. Like, the music they're writing is more meant to evoke the spirit rather than just be.
I would agree with that, except for Wicked. I think...
No. You won't know that abomination will not... be spoken of by name in this studio.
We're gonna have words now.
What musical do you like?
All right,
loves musicals.
Oh, I love musicals. What musicals do I like? Avenue Q. I like the music from Avenue Q a whole lot. That was fucking hilarious.
You don't like Wicked.
I don't like Wicked at all. And you know why? Besides the fact that the songs are shit. If you're gonna do a poll, I read the book. Now the book is certainly adult, but in tone, it's somewhat similar to the tone of the original Wizard of Oz books. Of course, the Wizard of Oz books are children's books, and Wicked is not a children's book, but they do something to sort of evoke the spirit of the original stories. So if you're going to do a musical based on a book that is a satire on the most famous work of children's fiction of the early 20th century, and the musical version of that book is possibly the most famous musical of all time.
Yes, but in the book, she has no character arc whatsoever, which would have made it not quite as interesting to come onto the stage. So they had to add in some things, make it some...
Well, no, my point is that if you're going to do a musical based on the Wizard of... a book that's sort of evoking the Wizard of Oz, Ted, I'd call you back! Hang on one second, I'm going to answer this phone. I'm going to call Josh back in 2 seconds. You know what I'm going to do? We're going to continue this discussion. I'm going to play some music... because that's me, all about professionalism. I'm going to play a song by a group I like to call Brand Nubian, because that's their name. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Theme Party. We will continue to our discussion of what we're discussing in a second.
Collaborated in a status type flow. So slap palms, swing arms, tap souls. Cause no rock rolls down our hill. Yo, black is kind of ill. We don't roll no rocks, we just fill. Heads with knowledge, pure foundation. Showing and proving through the manifestation of our name, which is brand new. Brand new being, and we come to make the people aware that black means first. 400 years we've been made to feel cursed, but now it's our time to rule. Student of the old, teacher of the new school. My inspiration is the 5% nation. As I cram, education was born like a thorny inside of swarm.
never to divide with brand new. Brand new we in, from the Sudan, plus I never ran, I'm from Africa, the central region, there I grew and I formed the legion of a force, see me ride on a jet black horse, at any cost, brand new we in to rise up and be the boss, so in all fairness of your black and show awareness, you can rally round the flag, stand tall or don't stand at all, you with the three and the three won't stack to the floor, cause that's a picture that I'm painting I can draw. See me work 9 to 5 on my easel. My physical is strong and my mind is cocked diesel. Brand new me in function in conjunction with a three. Brand new me, not on a bandwagon following a fad, making use of the knowledge that we already had. Grand poo, here to send the mind into a frenzy. I bet I swing something this summer for the Benzie. Deep into the mind, the brain to activate the pelvis. Deep in the blind, dumb, deaf, and blind is Elvis. Meaning old, so behold.
The black, the beautiful, the bold.
Now this fool should have tried harder. A wisdom to me is someone like Asada. I like to say peace to Bambada, Tasakuma, Ahmed, and Kenyatta. Brothers that'll fight for the cause, and they live in the boundaries of the righteous laws. To be exact, dominant means black, but some have a hard time trying to swallow that. Now we have some that are fake, wearing blue eyes and green eyes. Come on, give me a break. Brand Nubian here to wake up, take off the makeup, cause all of the do is cake up. Just be real, that's how I feel. Brand Nubian.
Inhabitant of Nubia.
Nubian, a member of one of the group of African tribes that formed a powerful empire between Egypt and Ethiopia from the 6th to 14th century.
Nubian,
any of several languages spoken in the central and northern Sudan, and that's why we call ourselves
Grand Nubian.
As the midnight oil burns, our minds turn. Make a mistake and be fake and you will burn. We're here to teach, so you might as well learn that the three has the knowledge for what you learn.
Grand Nubian.
I love this song. It's just so smooth.
Well, it's not far down to paradise. At least it's not for me. If the wind is right, you can sail away and find tranquility. Oh, the canvas can do miracles. Just you wait and see. Neverland, reason to pretend. And if the wind is right, you can find the joy of innocence again. Oh, the candles can do miracles. Just you wait and see. Believe me.
Seems upset the apple cart.
All kinds of things it seems upset the apple cart.
Ouch, don't deserve me. Ouch, please don't hurt me. Ouch, ow, ow, ouch. Ouch, don't deserve me. Ouch, please don't hurt me. Ouch, ow, ow, ouch.
I remember you. You're the one who made my dreams come true a few kisses ago. I remember you. You're the one who said I love you too. Yes, I do. Didn't you know? Remember too a distant bell and stars that fell like the rain out of the blue. And my life is through, and the angels ask me to recall the thrill of them all. Then I will tell them I remember you. distant bell and stars that fell just like the rain out of the blue. When my life is through and the angels ask me to recall the thrill of them all, then I will tell them I remember. Tell them I remember. Tell them I remember
enough to make.
Scenes from My First Date, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, I was such a young, strapping gangster back in the day. 15-year-old Ross Lincoln in Batman, bringing my gat. True story, my first kiss was during Batman. The original Tim Burton Batman, I might add. And as if to, you know, christen an entire life of being eligible, it was during the scene when Billy Dee Williams is introduced as Harvey Dent. And it was a very, very... She's just speaking to the microphone.
I was just trying to figure out the math there, because that was 1989.
It was 1989. I was 15 years old, and it was gorgeous. She wasn't that pretty, I guess, but...
Kissing Vicky Vale on the screen does not count as your first kiss. I mean, Kim Bassinger was hot and all, but it does not count.
No, her name was Michelle Bergschneider. And,
Who's that?
No, her name was Michelle Bergschneider. And,
Matt Nance.
Hey, all I'm saying is, I was the worst kiss ever.
Bat Dance.
Stop the presses.
Stop. This town needs an enema. Wait, pass me the Newcastle over there. I want a drink. We're passing around a bottle of Newcastle like a 40 tonight. Let me tell you guys what we just listened to. Before we go any further, the last song you heard was by one of my favorite bands ever, recent favorite bands, called Freeze Pop. They are from Boston, Massachusetts. They have many excellent songs. You should go to their website, freezepop.com. Freeze Pop, like the little things that you can buy in the store, you know, and eat. They're a very fucking amazing band.
Do you ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight?
I do. That song was called Emotions and Photons, and it's actually unique because normally the Duke of Kenoten, I believe is his name. It's Liz Enthusiasm and the Duke of Kenoten and then another guy whose name escapes me at the moment. The Duke does not normally sing. Normally Liz Enthusiasm sings. That song sort of had a Postal Service feel to it, although, and I realize I'm breaking a rule because I don't actually like the Postal Service. I actually hate them, in fact. I don't hate them. I just kind of... I don't know why. They rub me the wrong way, and I can't put my finger on what it is. And it might have been that the first time I heard about the Postal Service, it was from someone who had the worst musical taste of all time. And it sort of tainted them, because any recommendation from them was automatically like, oh, you must have got this in, you know, douchebag mainstream music quarterly. You know? Anyway, the point is, they're not a horrible band. That song kind of had a Postal Service feel. And I'm going to shut up. Do you guys have some comments you want to add? You should grab your mics and feel free to chime in at any time.
The Postal Service is like the Polyphonic Spree of the 90s.
Now, I like the Polyphonic Spree, although they do wish they were the Flaming Lips very, very badly. And which is weird, because sometimes when a band comes out, you kind of want there to be 30 bands like that, like the Pixies. I kind of wish there were like a bunch of bands like the Pixies. And every time someone rips the Pixies...
So did MTV.
Yeah, exactly. Every time someone rips the Pixies off, they end up with some pretty decent music, sort of. Or at least passably good. But, you know, there are some bands that should not be ripped off. Some bands... like the Flaming Lips, for instance, should not be imitated. So before that, we heard a song by Frank Ifield. I guess a sort of like country, folky sort of thing. I actually have not been able to
blues
find it.
Blues yodeling.
Yes, thank you. The song was called I Remember You, and I just heard it for the first time a while back. It's on this in the last couple of months. It's from this compilation of... there's a record label that went bust in the late 60s, but they compiled like all their singles. And I'm not giving you very much information, but if you go to our MySpace account, I will have the information up for you. But it's this great compilation, seven discs of every single... It's the same label that the McCoys are on. Hang on, Sloopy, that band. Anyway, before that, we heard a song by The Ruddles. The Ruddles, of course, was Neil Innes and Eric Idle. Eric Idle from Monty Python. Neil Innes was the guy who co-wrote a lot of Monty Python's music with Eric Idle. And before he worked with Monty Python, Neil Innes was in a band called the Bonzo Dog Doodah Band. Eric Idle, of course, was sketch comedy. Anyway, after Monty Python went bust in the early 70s, or not went bust, but the show ended, and in between movies, they did this sketch for Saturday Night Live about a fake British band called the Ruddles, which is basically a parody of the Beatles. And they even wrote like three songs that sounded like Beatles clone music. And the skit itself was such a huge hit. Well, they went ahead and did an entire two-hour fake documentary about the career of this band called The Ruddles. It's called All You Need Is Cash. It's now out on DVD. Soundtrack is available on CD. And it is hilarious. And the music is pure genius. And the song you heard was Ouch, which is one of the few, like, obvious parodies. Like, usually they do more, like, funny references to, like, a period in the Beatles' career. But there's a few songs on there that are direct, like, parodies of specific songs. They have a song called Hey Diddle Diddle, which is a ripoff of... Or a parody of I Am the Walrus. And, And they have a song called Goose Step Mama, which is a parody of everything of basically everything on the Beatles' first album, and then "Ouch," which is a parody of "Help." Then before
Blackbird.
That, what?
Blackbird. It's a parody of Blackbird.
Shut up. Before that, Christopher Cross, "Sailing," and I reiterate what I said earlier: that song is just so smooth. I have been watching Yacht Rock all week long, and for those of you who don't know, go to channel101.com. Channel 101 is a thing that's been going on here in LA for about 3 years now. Put together by the two guys who did the Heat Vision and Jack pilot. It's basically a public access 5-minute television show contest. Every month, the panel of judges review a whole bunch of submissions. They're all 5 minutes long. If they decide that something can be admitted, then it makes it to the festival. And the festival's a couple of hours long. And it's just basically these 5-minute television shows. And at the end, the audience votes. And if the show is voted in the top 10, then it's renewed effectively so they can make a second episode. If you're renewed, then you automatically get to make one for the next time. And so conceivably, if the audience keeps liking what you're doing... Unlike Heat Vision and Jack, which was sadly canceled before they even made it a show...
I just found a great copy of it online. I just downloaded it.
That show... Heat Vision and Jack, by the way, was... a brief and sadly lamented television pilot starring Jack Black. It was a sort
directed
of
by Ben Stiller.
Directed by Ben Stiller and featuring the voice of Owen Wilson. And it was a science fiction comedy show, or would have been if it had been picked up, where Jack Black plays a former astronaut who, while in outer space, is exposed to an extremely dangerous amount of radiation. When he comes back to Earth, it turns out that at nighttime, he suddenly becomes the smartest man on Earth. And during the is it nighttime or daytime?
No. Whenever the sun comes out, he becomes the smartest man in the world.
That's right, but he's stupid at night.
Well, he's just Jack Black at night.
He's just Jack Black at night, but in the daytime, he's the smartest man on Earth. And his old stoner roommate who got killed, and his soul now inhabits the body of Jack's motorcycle. And the motorcycle's name is Heat Vision. So it's, you know, Heat Vision and Jack. And the show is hilarious. And
but who is that? Ron Black plays himself.
Ron Silver
plays himself.
Right, Ron Silver does play himself.
But instead of it just being him being an actor, he's also one of the secret agents working for NASA that's trying to bring back Heat Vision and Jack.
Exactly.
And so he chases them through every episode. The episodes.
Yeah, so it's like a cross between the $6 Million Man and the Incredible Hulk. It's very funny, and it didn't get picked
up. With some A-Team and Knight Rider thrown in.
Precisely. Didn't get picked up, but you can find it online. The two guys who created the show created Channel 101. So go to channel101.com, and you can watch failed shows, rejected shows. You can watch every show that's currently in primetime. Primetime are the top 5 shows every month. Like I said, if you get renewed, you're picked up for a second episode, and you can conceivably keep going until people no longer like what you're doing. The current reigning champ of Channel 101 is a series called Yacht Rock. Yacht Rock is a made-up term. The guys who created the show invented it to describe music like Michael McDonald, Kenny Loggins, Christopher Cross, Steely Dan, Toto, even somewhat Michael Jackson. Basically, all those like Southern California studio musicians who found pop success in the late 70s and early 80s by making incredibly smooth music. And they all work together, which is kind of funny because you realize that there really was like this weird scene of professional musicians who ended up becoming pop chart people, and they all co-write each other's music, and they all appear on each other's albums constantly.
Wasn't Daryl Dragon a part of that whole scene too? As in the captain and Captain Centennial?
Yes, he was, and there was a couple of other people that
I know these things.
Yeah, the two biggest people to come out of that scene, well, actually the three biggest people to come out of that scene were. Michael McDonald, who everyone knows if they're a good person, Kenny Loggins, and Christopher Cross. And of course, Christopher Cross and Michael McDonald wrote a lot of songs together, blah blah blah. The point is, it is fucking hilarious because it basically the hitch of the show is the relationship between Michael McDonald and Kenny Loggins. How at first they're the best of friends, but then Kenny Loggins turns his back on smooth music and becomes a rock and soundtrack king because he gets seduced by Steve Perry from Journey. And anyway, there's 5 episodes so far, and I've been watching them all week. And of course, as regular Theme Party listeners know, I have always been obsessed with that kind of music. Always. Back me up, Josh.
Absolutely. It's amazing because you have part of Michael McDonald's soul in you, and he's not even dead.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually have one of my superpowers. They're mediocre superpowers. I can't really fight crime so much as annoy crime, but I could do that. One of my many superpowers is that I can Michael McDonaldize any song, provided that I know the song. Obviously, you can't just name me a song that I haven't heard in 15 years and do it, but if I'm familiar with the song, I can Michael McDonaldize it. I have Michael McDonald.
But do you have any requests? Because he can actually.
Well, I have to be in the right mood for it. When I was hosting karaoke, I did it all the time, but those days are long past. But Michael McDonald is the Transformers theme. That was my shining moment of glory. I think. No Transformers, more than meets the eye. You know. So.
Yeah, that and also Baby Got Back.
Oh, that's right. I like big butts, and I can't deny. Anyway. Basically, all you have to do is do like weird. You have to do like weird minor chord progressions, and do this with your voice. Like you have to simultaneously falsetto and throatify and open your mouth up while you sing, but you can't sing with your lungs. You have to sing with your throat. You know what I'm talking about? Yeah. But anyone can. Michael McDonald. That's how a white man sounds like he's got soul.
It's amazing because Ross's eyes even turn bluer when he's doing blue-eyed soul.
Yeah, the one thing that I'm really pissed off about is that I'm going bald instead of salt and pepper gray. So my hero, Morrissey's bald, so at least one of my heroes I can emulate when I'm older. Although he's got the
Daryl Hall.
Daryl Hall's not bald.
He's got that receding hairline that just keeps threatening to recede more, but actually hasn't.
That's true, but I've actually got the beginning of the Friar Tuck on top of my head, which is pissing me the fuck off, by the way.
But, you know, I saw a picture. I guess they're what? Hall & Oates are on tour right now?
They're always on tour.
Well, yeah, I saw a recent picture of them. They're looking good. I mean, Oates really needs to get the... John Oates needs to get the rock the mustache back.
Thank you.
But
John Oates is one of those people, like Tom Selleck. Remember how weird Tom Selleck looked when he shaved his mustache off? Remember how heterosexual I am? No.
I agree. It was weird. It'd be like Yul Brynner with hair, kind of weird.
No, absolutely. And
in the user lights would never get past me.
Thank you. Exactly my point. Hall & Oates, by the way, I have not seen them in concert, and it's pissing me off because 2 years ago, while I was in the midst of this major depression, I depressed myself out of going to see what would have been the apotheosis of Ross. Michael McDonald and Hall & Oates toured together. And I have to tell you, had I only gathered the courage to get up and go see them, I could have probably lived a dream that could only be topped if Momus and Morrissey toured together with Eric B. and Rakim as their opening act.
And I think you would have been there, and you would have been overcome with such awesomeness that you would have done that stuttering, crying thing. Like, I can't believe I'm hearing.
Yeah. It would have been pretty hilarious. Oh, my God. The point is, I want to say hello to Ellen, who is currently IMing us. Ellen is listening to us all the way from, Kent, England, I believe? I believe it's Kent. I may be confusing things, but if I'm not mistaken, Kent was also the birthplace of the English Peasant Rebellion of 1348, which almost brought the royal family and the British nobility to its knees until they managed to surround everybody because the peasants only had pitchforks and torches, and the soldiers had pikes and guns, or crossbows. And once again, it just goes to show, don't bring a pitchfork to a pike fight.
And Kent was also the obsequious TA, and that was the foil in Real Genius.
Yes.
Kent, and stop playing with yourself.
It's true.
I love that.
Kent, this is God.
I love that movie so much. I actually think that they should just retitle it Montage the Motion Picture. Because it's nothing but montages from start to finish. Every other scene, it's like... And the best is the music for the montages. In fact, I believe I can play some music in the next musical set Genius.
While he's queuing that up, I'll give the backstory. So, kind of to be self-referential on Theme Party, a while ago, the theme for Theme Party was montages.
Oh, yeah.
And montage music. And, when Ross came up with that theme, we were sitting around just kind of talking about it, and we were talking about how Real Genius was the greatest montage movie that we could think of, because there were like five montages of them putting the laser together or whatever, and it was always just this really weird, obscure studio, like 80s studio music that was playing. So I quickly realized, I looked up, they never actually released a soundtrack to Real Genius. Because, not, I mean, it's none of it's like known pop. So,
yeah.
Luckily, this was back in the good old days of the internet when there was file sharing. I managed to locate every song on that soundtrack except the one that apparently was never actually released as a single. And put together the unofficial Real Genius soundtrack that hopefully Ross has some on the iPod.
I've got the one from the single best montage in the movie that I will play in a second. I want to say Ellen, by the way, has a over a year now, I guess. No, 2005, I believe Xander was born. Ellen will certainly get me correct. She has a son, and they just purchased a home in Kent. It's one of those quaint, like, Victorians that's been converted.
Wow, her son's doing well. He's already purchased. Oh.
Yeah. I shouldn't have put those two sentences together. 10 months old is how old her son is. And they bought this cute little house in Kent, and it's like one of those old Victorian homes that's been like split off into four units. Mm-hmm. And so they're kind of like duplexes, but much more elegant because it's England instead of, you know, the sort of tract housing we have here. And except in LA, where everything's up in hills, so even if it's like tract housing, it looks incredible because you go out in your backyard and you see everything. Go on.
Because there's so many Victorian houses in LA too.
There are a lot of like, well, there's more like 20 houses built in the 20s and stuff like
there's
that.
There's like four, and they're all in Heritage Square.
What's the style of architecture that's all over Echo Park and Silver Lake though? Like all these houses that were built back in the 20s and stuff. What's that called?
Well, there's all the craftsman homes, and then there's all the like split level like Pueblo ranch style. But I mean, I think the dominant one down here is just the arts and crafts bungalows.
Mm. Okay. Why would like
but Heritage Square? It really is. It's all Victorian around Heritage Square, which is in Highland Park. If you notice, as you're going down the 110, right before you get to Chinatown, if you look over to your left.
Oh, yeah. You know what?
There's a Victorian church, like a white slatted Victorian church. Looks like it's straight out of the Rocky Horror Picture Show. And surrounding it are several huge, huge Victorian mansions.
Yeah. You know what? There's actually a train stop, Heritage Square Arroyo Station. I know this because I take the train from time to time. You know what? I want to go back to an earlier conversation we were having, though. I believe we were discussing Wicked. And the thought that I wanted to say, and feel free to join in any time because I know I've been monopolizing it, but you know what? It's my show, bitches. I can monopolize what I want.
So the theme is bad musicals?
High five, by the way. Josh agrees with me. What I was saying to Josh about a week and a half ago, and I'm repeating myself now, is that the thing about Wicked that bugs me is that when you make a musical that's based on a book that is heavily referential to one of the most famous books of all time, The Wizard of Oz, the musical, it seems to me, should probably... like do much to evoke they shouldn't plagiarize the music, but it should evoke the spirit of The Wizard of Oz. I really think they missed a golden opportunity to write some really great songs. There's not a single song.
So you're not saying that necessarily the musical on its own, if you were totally taking it away from the fact that it relates to The Wizard of Oz, doesn't have good music.
Oh, it has horrible music. Terrible music. It sounds like Whitney Houston after a crack binge. I mean, it's like, I'm flying, finally, I'm flying, we're together at college for witches, and everyone knows that we're trying to... I mean, it sounds like what you'd see in a Simpsons episode. You know, like the Planet of the Apes, the musical, where it's like, I hate every ape I see, from chimpanzee to chimpanzee. Although, that's a good song. I know I'm being very mean. I know you love Wicked.
It's
I know
the
you
kind
love...
of It's the kind of music, the kind of musical you expect to see Emmy Rossum singing.
Yeah, feel free. I am not proud, and I know that I'm in a distinct minority because Wicked got handed a shitload of Tonys. So.
Since I was too busy standing outside trying to get in earlier, did you admit to liking any new musicals, Ross?
Avenue Q, I've been listening to some songs recently because Josh said it was better than the one song that I'd heard, and I have to say the music's really good from it. I was amused highly, very witty, and in fact, witty and vulgar at the same time. Two of my favorite things together.
Sondheim. Sondheim, you just can't go wrong with Sondheim.
Yeah, that's pretty much who they rip off in the musical, Stephen Sondheim. And yeah, Stephen Sondheim is the king of that. My favorite Sondheim musical is Assassins, actually.
I like that. My favorite thing about Sondheim is he's got that thing about like great musical composers, because great musical composers hate singers. They absolutely hate singers, so they write music that is just utterly painful to sing.
Right.
It's like the 2 hours of the United States National Anthem. I mean, it's just...
Yeah, but at the same time...
Music Man. I mean...
Yeah, but the thing...
Meredith Wilson hated singing. I mean, putting that... I mean, it... You know, not not that the Music Man isn't great, but really, on this tip, he really is kind of the Kevin Smith of musicals. He jams as many words as he can into the mouths of his singers.
Yeah. Well, the cool thing about the Music Man is that not only are they very complicated melodies, and as you say, like the Star-Spangled Banner, not the easiest things in the world to just sing. But the best part about it is they're really memorable tunes, and as long as you play the songs at the tempo they're written, you know, and follow what they're supposed to be sung like, it is impossible. Impossible, except maybe Until There Was You, for any fucking modern bullshit American Idol singer to go, "That was bad! On a church! And I never heard them singing!" You know, you can't get like, 76 trombones led the big parade, and 110 cornets close at hand.
That so needs to be your audition song for American Idol.
Thank you. They were followed by rows, rows, and rows of... You know, you get the point. Fuck everyone who sings like that. Fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. I'm going to use both my middle fingers. You can't even see them. But fuck you, do not ruin music with your stupid showboating singing style.
This is kind of a half-assed plug, because I can't remember the exact date, but speaking of great musicals, the Sherman Brothers' greatest musical, Mary Poppins, will be showing soon Egyptian. I will so be there. I hope to see everyone that can make it there.
We just high-fived on that, because there is nothing manlier than going to the fucking Mary Poppins musical.
F yeah.
Hell yeah.
It's balls out.
It's fucking balls out is what I'm saying. Just a spoonful of sugar. No, a spoonful of fucking crack. That'll make the medicine go down. You know how I roll. So anyway, ladies, you want to interrupt because I've been dominating.
It's fine. Go on.
No, interrupt. You're my guest on the show. I'm like the Bill O'Reilly of musical criticism. I'm just like, shut up! Shut up! You're a bastard!
Honestly, it's okay. I'm still going to love Wicked no matter
what you
say.
You are allowed to. I'm proud that
I personally think that it's one of the best musicals to come out in like 20 years. I think that it evokes a lot of the same musical feeling from the musicals I love, including things like Music Man, The Sound of Music.
Wow. That's bold,
A Chorus Line, which is like my favorite musical ever.
I like the legs in A Chorus Line. Oh, yeah. Giggity, giggity. I'm sorry. She's gone.
You're cute.
Your mom's cute. On my jock. That was lazy. I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen. No, you know what? I'm actually proud that I haven't swayed you at all.
No.
And that's what we're all about here at Theme Party.
We've had many arguments.
We haven't had arguments. We've had fun discussions.
We've had very fun discussions.
Yeah, we never fight.
I know.
I respect your opinion.
I respect yours as well.
Because you have enough...
I was just thinking, Ross, that... You know, if you ever decide to change your look, which you have on occasion decided to do a new look,
right?
You need to really kind of rock the Bob Fosse look. You need to be in all black. You need to be wearing pants that are actually
half shirt,
true waist, half shirt with the smarmy beard and mustache.
You realize I'm going to have to do a hell of a lot more work on my abs before I will ever wear a half shirt. Ever. But I can do the spirit hands, so.
Well, what about Fosse and the film version of The Little Prince when he played the snake?
I haven't seen the film version of The Little Prince, so there
I'm a philistine. Did you ever see the musical Fosse? Now that was an amazing musical.
That's the one about... Wait, isn't that the one about the motorcycle guy who moves in with the Cunninghams? Oh, wait, that's Fonzie. Get it? No. Oh, comedy gold! I'm a comedian. Sorry.
I want to get back to why you respect my opinion.
Well, I don't know, because I do.
You were going off on a tangent.
No, I was just saying you have enough good musical taste to buffer the... And you stick to your guns, and you never get like... And you, I think you understand me.
I do, really
yeah,
do.
Yeah, and I understand you. I'm not actually full of hate for you. And I am going to express my opinions freely, because I'm going to do that. Some people, when you have opinions, where you express your opinions freely, I like disagreeing sometimes.
We both love intellectual discussions.
Exactly. Now, there are some things I refuse to discuss. For instance, Matchbox 20, Dave Matthews Band, Avril Lavigne. There are some artists that, for whatever reason, they rub me so raw that I will kick you out of the car if you even try to play it.
There would be no reason for me to disagree with you on those at any point. That's just bad music, and there is no going back on it.
Word. The point is, I enjoy this sort of thing, And I'm never going to apologize for my own opinions. And I don't want somebody to change their mind because of, you know, me being like, ah!
One of my favorite artists is actually Jeff Buckley. Have you ever heard of him?
You know I love Jeff Buckley. Well, I love Jeff Buckley's first record. I really wish they hadn't made...
Sketches?
Yes, the Sketches. I really wish they hadn't released that because those songs were rough and there's only one good song on it.
Which one?
I can't remember now because it's been literally... I reviewed the album when it came... The Sketches. I reviewed it when it came out. And I was so, like... how do you put it? It was so, like... It felt like I was watching them, like, rob his grave. You know what I mean? Because he had just started work on that album when he died.
And it was definitely rough, but...
I would have preferred, like, a special reissue of the first record. And tracks from the second album included as bonus tracks or maybe a second disc rather than like this fanfare it got. It just felt disrespectful.
So, since I haven't heard it because I'm not very familiar with Jeff Buckley, is it as rough as that like posthumous Elliott Smith album? Because
no,
I really want to like that album, but it's so obvious that some of the songs are in such early incarnations.
No, it's 1,000 times rougher. Elliott Smith was about 75% done with From the Basement on the Hill when he died. And Jeff Buckley was maybe a month into the process of banging it out. He had like toured like nonstop for like a year and a half in 95, right? And then took some time off. I guess he had a bad breakup or something. I don't know. Jeff Buckley's passing was a really bad, bad thing and very depressing.
It was interesting because I actually came across the first, well, actually, Sketches. And I didn't really know who he was, and I started listening to it, and I thought it was terrible, actually.
Yeah.
And then I got rid of it, and then for some reason I decided to find Grace.
Grace
I just stumbled upon Grace.
The songs, Last Goodbye in particular is...
Right.
But go on, I'm not...
No, but it was beautiful. So anyway, I'm like, I'll give this guy one more shot.
Right.
Because I was just like, couldn't believe how bad it was. And then when I... listen to it. I mean, I just absolutely fell in love. And for the last like 6 years, I've listened to it every day.
Yeah,
everything and anything of him.
That album is really incredible. And if you really love Grace, and the Sketches album is not the worst thing you've ever heard. But Grace is one of those albums that he just got it so right the first time. Like usually people don't have debut albums that are that perfect. And you know, I guess the relief for me in that situation is that at least it was like a accidental death by drowning. It's always depressing when some idiot kills, you know, ODs, essentially. You know what I mean? I had to, like when Elliott Smith died, I hate to admit this, but I was actually relieved that it was a suicide, you know, rather than, you know, him succumbing to
his... Or was it?
Yeah, it could have been a murder, I guess, for all we know.
That's what they were saying.
Yeah, they reopened it. But technically, I think it's because they can't definitively pin it down. His girlfriend at the time... apparently was never under suspicion, but the cloud of uncertainty has hung over her for a long time. I don't know how she's coped with that, but it sucks because it probably sucked to be her.
Yeah, it would totally, you know, who knows, because there are two people in that house. One survived, and that's the only person that knows what really happened. And
yeah,
you know, it's...
The same goes for, like, Courtney Love and Kurt Cobain. I mean, they're still thinking it's like a conspiracy.
Mm. The funny thing about that is for Courtney Love, for that conspiracy to be true, you have to invent someone who's not retarded, addicted to 40 drugs, and incapable of speech. Courtney Love is simply put not smart enough to get away with murder. I cannot accept a universe in which someone as dumb and untalented as Courtney Love could successfully hire a killer and then make it look like a suicide.
Right.
That is just not possible, especially since the killer that's supposed to have done it was a meth addicted speed freak who...
And didn't he get hit by a train or something?
Yeah,
he ended up laying down on some train tracks, and they try to tie that into the conspiracy, too.
No, the guy that was supposedly the killer.
Yeah. It's just a bunch of coincidences.
The evidence really amounts to a record store owner that basically heard Courtney Love go, "I want to kill him!" It's like, yeah, because none of the rest of us have ever said that about our significant others in public.
Yeah. Well, I think it's like the Yoko thing multiplied by 400.
Courtney Love killed Yoko Ono?
No, but... Yeah, exactly.
News alert.
I wish that would have been a murder.
How about they fight?
Yeah, you know what? Yoko deserves a lot of disdain for her records. Holy crap, they're bad. And for basically being insufferably bad at art. However, she did make John Lennon very, very rich, and he was almost not doing so well financially. None of the Beatles really were until they got out of the Beatles. and renegotiated their record contracts. But
Spies Like Us. Spies
yeah.
Like
yeah,
Us.
Yeah, but Spies Like Us is 15 years later. Paul McCartney has a lot of great shit in the 70s.
Well, at least until they met Michael Jackson.
No. I'm actually saying he made... But no, I'm just saying that Paul McCartney made tons of money off Spies Like Us. Mm,
right.
That's not... Yeah, no, I'm not going to go into... I mean, it's impressively self-evident how awful that thing is.
Oh, yeah. And my point is that Courtney Love is widely seen as having had a very negative effect both on Nirvana and on Kurt Cobain. And there's probably some truth to that. Courtney Love was much more hedonistic than and materialistic. And apparently that was a big problem for Kurt. She put all this pressure on him to want to move to L.A. and live in a mansion and all that kind of shit. And the rest of the band hated her. And, I mean, obviously they've been litigating for 10 years. Out of spite, she kept the 10th anniversary edition of Nevermind from being released. I mean, she's a whore. But she's a stupid, mediocre, petty mind.
Did you see that Frances Bean kind of made her little media debut not too long ago? She actually, like, had a press conference where she... Frances Bean, as in Frances Bean Cobain, their daughter, who's now 15.
Wow.
Like, had a press interview where she was asking... She was tired of people picking on her mom, and it was... That's one of those things that makes you feel your age is when you see the 15-year-old Frances Bean Cobain making a press statement.
Yeah, and I have to say that Frances, your mom is a whore. I'm sure that you're nice, and no disrespect.
Frances was dressed like Charlize Theron in that movie with Keanu Reeves.
Oh, A Sweet November.
Yes.
You know what? We should play some music, and we'll come back in a second. I'm going to open this next musical set. 10:30 right now. We're going to stick around and play for however long we feel like it. I'm going to
say this, and I'm not saying what you should do with it, Ross. But you know, there are lots of celebrations this week.
You're right.
The whole Mozart thing.
You're right.
The whole Challenger thing. But the most important thing was yesterday. I believe Motley Crue got the first star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame with an umlaut.
Nice.
Well, good for them.
And there are like three things wrong with it, because it shouldn't be a star. It should be a pentagram. It shouldn't have the record logo. It should have the theater logo, so it looks like Theater Pain's cover. And it really should be the first Hollywood Walk of Fame star on Sunset.
Yeah, I agree with everything you just said, even though otherwise I don't care. Because Motley Crue.
I want to hear some Crue.
I don't actually own any Crue. You know that. You realize that like my willingness to explore the world of hair metal is a recent phenomenon. Well, recent, 6 years old now. But for most of my life, I resisted hair metal like the plague, and I still have only been able to find a few that I can really appreciate. Like, for some dumb reason, Def Leppard. And, actually, Def Leppard, in fact,
do not have a star on the Walk of Fame.
Of course not. And, at least Motley Crue stayed disgusting for the bulk of their career. The point is, everything you said is true, and I'm going to play the Promise song from the Real Genius soundtrack. This is the best montage in the entire movie, and if you've seen the Real Genius more than once, you'll know exactly what scene it is. To quote, it's the big scene where they're studying for the big test that's coming up and working on the laser.
Ah, the cramming montage.
Yes, the cramming montage. And I believe it includes the test scene where Val Kilmer sends the note to Mr. Pecker, Professor Hathaway, that says, I aced this, and now... Without any further ado, I give you number one. And here it comes. To get even with Dr. Hathaway. I think that's how the montage starts. Because he just goes, self-realization. I was thinking of the immortal words of Socrates, who said, I drank what?
Short straw, but it's broken. Come on.
Hello. Hi, guys. Hi, guys. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Ain't nobody loves me anymore. I would like to say what we just listened to.
Ain't no party like a Ross Coast party, because a Ross Coast party don't stop.
A Ross Dress for Less party? Yes.
There's the right coast, the left coast, and
the Ross Coast. Yeah. Exactly. We just heard Pine AM. That was the last song we heard. Japanese group Pine AM. If you want to find their music, it's Pine like the tree with a little asterisk, and then capital AM like the time of day. Song was called Do I Know You? Before that, we heard Gary Numan. Actually, Two Way Army. I've been saying this like 3 weeks in a row, but I'm enamored with Gary Numan, as people know. And Gary Numan, before he was Gary Numan, was actually part of Two Way Army, which was effectively exactly the same as Gary Numan, only he didn't have enough clout to just release albums under his own name. So Two Way Army released two albums before the success of Gary Newman's songs gave him the clout to basically shift it completely over to just being Gary Numan. But the second Two Way Army album is the first commercial success for the band, and it has the song Our Friends Electric, which is one of the more well-known Gary Numan songs. And that song was called It Must Have Been Years, which is a pretty fucking awesome song, in my opinion. Before that, we heard a song by my personal close friend in imaginary land, Alan Brax, French producer and house impresario. The song was called Rubicon. It's a single from 2004. And I am completely obsessed with that song to this day. And you can find it on a compilation called The Upper Cuts, which I think is only import right now, but you might be able to find it in Amoeba Records, or just go online and look for Alan Brax and Friends, The Upper Cuts. There's a lot of really good examples of like what French sort of like dance music has been like for the last like 10 years. Some of it's very generic, like Daft Punk bullshit, but some of it's actually really cool, because Alan Brax's Strong Suit is like basically resurrecting like dance music styles from the early 80s, like the sort of stuff that was played in New York City. You know what I'm talking about, Josh?
Electro?
Yes, I am. So that song, of course, was very electro. And the first song in the set was from the Real
Genius. As opposed to Electro Clash, it was very electro.
Right. Or as opposed to Electro Pop.
Exactly.
Yeah, electro was a specific style of electronic dance music that came out of New York City and, to a lesser extent, London. And it was typified by sort of robotic, repetitious, almost disco kind of like rhythms. Or not rhythms, but tempos. And lots of really like high-end synthesizers. And lots of very like alien kind of noises. And the best thing you can... Or the best way to describe it would be to call it cokey.
Well, Herbie Hancock's Rocket is probably the most well-known.
Thank you, yes. Yes,
kind of. I mean, and that's not really electro, but it's very electro bass.
Exactly. Klein and MBO was a really big electro band, or at least in the club scene. Madonna's first album is really influenced by electro.
Yes, Jellybean Benitez, the producer of Madonna's first album, was very much a king of electro back then. Before he became a king of house, because a lot of those electro guys kind of invented house music.
Yeah, and took it over to England because no one in the United States wanted to listen to it. And so there you go. Before that, the song was... Sorry, I'm eating Doritos. Hang on.
But speaking of like electro pop now, which doesn't really mean what electro then did, the one that... And I'm so tragically not hip anymore, but something that just kind of struck me that I just realized recently is the term emo has been completely appropriated by mainstream pop now to mean bands like Good Charlotte.
Yeah.
What kind of music is emo supposed to be? I keep trying to figure it out.
Emo is short for emo core. Emo itself is short for emotion.
The first band that I ever heard the word emo applied
Fugazi.
To. Fugazi.
Yeah. Emo was basically a post-punk sort of...
most well-known old-school emo band, Weezer. That was what emo used to be. Is this very...
No, actually...
Well,
if you don't mind me interrupting, what I will say is that... Weezer is the reason that emo sounds like it does now. Because what happened was a lot of the hardcore bands, particularly East Coast hardcore bands, Minor Threat, Bad Brains, those guys, who, for whatever reason, a lot of those guys, after their bands broke up, played in each other's bands and started doing this like music that was heavier on emotion and less on content. And Fugazi was the band that sort of invented that sound. And everyone called it emo because they didn't know what else to call it. And it just referred to, like, you know, emotion or, like, expressing, like, you know, Primal Rage or Sadness or whatever.
Well, it was hardcore punk that wasn't political. It was more you know,
exactly.
Boy Loses Girl kind of pop music.
Yeah, but
still like hardcore punk music sensibility.
Exactly.
But I love emotional music. Like I love my Jewel and my Tori and all
well,
that.
Well, we
mean,
but
what, not, not, not music, quite, yeah, not quite like, emo there.
No, yeah. What we mean is like punk rock up to that. Hey guys, punk rock up to that point was not concerned with writing boy. I mean, the original generation of punks, the Ramones, the Sex Pistols, the Buzzcocks, those bands wrote a lot of love songs. By the end of the 70s, probably a direct result of the corporate record industry completely rejecting punk rock almost every chance they got. Hi, Angie. Hi, Philip. Probably a result of that. Punk rock bands became increasingly like overtly political, not just political in the way they dressed or their outspoken antics, but literally political, typified by bands like Minor Threat, the Dead Kennedys.
Yeah, you can't really imagine Jello Biafra writing a love song.
Right. Or even like Black Flag. But those guys...
Or Henry Rollins writing a love song.
Exactly.
Or Keith Morris of the Circle Jerks writing a love song.
Precisely. But it got to the point where, like, by the time you have by the time 1983, 1984 rolls around, you have punk rock bands with names like The Bullet That Shot Ronald Reagan.
Thriller.
Say what?
And you have Thriller. Let's not forget. We can't ever mention 1983 without mentioning Thriller.
Right. Well, my point is that by the time you get to 1983, the sound of punk rock was hardcore, which it refers to very short, very fast, very minimal guitar solo, maximum, like, anger expression. Hardcore got associated a lot with, like, racism, but it wasn't racist music at all. Most of the hardcore guys were, like, leftists, practically communists.
As popularized by the Repo Man soundtrack.
Precisely, yeah. Repo Man soundtrack full of hardcore music. So the point is, punk rock got reflexively political to the point now where when people think of punk rock, they don't really think of, like, the Sex Pistols or, like, the fact that all the 70s punk bands were basically, like, writing pop music... kind of glammy influence, but much more influenced by like the 50s. We think of like
no, we do, but you're also dating yourself.
Right,
people today think punk rock, it's simple, it's Green Day.
You're right. I guess I'm getting ahead of myself. It got to the point where punk rock was, that's what you thought of when you thought of punk rock. You thought of music like that and songs like Reagan is an asshole, you know, and it got kind of stifling, so a lot of those bands moved on and started doing songs that talked more about personal things, but they were still doing really hardcore music. But they would slow it down, add a lot more like musical experimentation into it. People called it emo because I guess that sounded edgy and didn't make them feel like pussies for listening to
it.
And then Weezer came out, and Weezer was influenced by metal but also by punk. And for whatever reason, Weezer started getting called an emo band. And so all these crappy bands like Good Charlotte and whatever you want to talk about, they all started with not Weezer's first album but Weezer's second album. What is it? Pinkerton.
Pinkerton.
Yeah.
The one that they didn't do any... That's a very emo move on Pinkerton.
Yeah.
Remember, they didn't do any videos on that album because they didn't like how... They felt they were too popular from doing videos for the first album.
And that album really, like... I mean, the tour did well. The album... They did do one video for that album. But after that, River Phoenix, did exactly what you said.
Or Rivers Cuomo.
Rivers Cuomo. God damn it. We all know that I'm kind of dyslexic. Forgive me for that. Anyway... Yeah, Rivers.
What does that have to do with River Phoenix?
I get names mixed up in my head all the time. Hence, I call Tom Todd and Todd Tom.
Lots of drugs?
No, not lots of drugs. I just have a...
Alkyon.
Not you. I was talking about the two rivers.
Oh, right. The two rivers. Rivers Cuomo definitely did what Josh just said. The point is, Pinkerton sort of tanked when it first came out. But by 2000, it had become like an extremely like seminal album for a lot of really young kids. So they all formed bands that wanted to be like Pinkerton. So Weezer started touring again in 2000 and 2001, and suddenly like a bajillion Orange County kind of kids are showing up at their concerts. And that's bands like Good Charlotte and Jimmy Eat World and stuff like that were formed, influenced by them. And anybody want to add to that?
Well, I mean, I brought it up because some people that we work with that are not music people at all, not... music geeks at us like all, and they keep talking. They started saying the word emo, and that really just took me off guard. It's like this is kind of a music geek term. Why are you guys using it? But then same thing happened a few years ago when mainstream people started talking about electro, and I was, you know, I'm thinking about something I want to do the robot to, and they're talking about They're talking about whatever the.
I have a 15-year-old cousin that claims to love emo, and it's like her favorite kind of music. And she's definitely not, you know, your offbeat kind of kid.
Yeah, no, as best as I can tell, it's interesting because it reminds me a lot of like music in the early 90s, where the top 40 was kind of split, like. Because you've got Nirvana and Pearl Jam on the top 40, and so you've got kids that are really into that, but then they feel like it's their alternative. I don't know what they thought they were alternative to, because the other, you've still got the Mariah Carey stuff on the same pop charts, but yeah. It seems like that's the same thing that's kind of happening now.
Well, alternative became like the pop music of the 90s.
Yeah, well, the term alternative is useless anyway. I mean, no band ever... The only bands who ever said that they were forming an alternative band were douchebags like Matchbox 20. No band with any integrity musical taste would ever...
Seems to be the theme of tonight is how much Matchbox 20 sucks.
Oh, I'm going to pray. I'm going to shout out from the mountaintops. They're not even a relevant band anymore. I'm actually dissing them, and it's like I'm like an old fogey for still dissing them. But you know what? Even though they're no longer respected, and even though they don't sell like they used to, they need to be put down. It's kind of like how every now and then some crazy German guy or some crazy Austrian guy will get a little political power from the far right party, and then the rest of Europe has to go, "What the fuck are you electing a fascist for?" And everyone goes, oh, my bad. Sorry about that. I am doing that to music. I am making sure never again will we have songs like, "I wanna, oh, fuck you." That is hot. The point is...
So listeners, what we're really
saying...
I'm
the Simon Wiesenthal of musical criticism. Go.
Listeners, what we're saying is, you know you know how your IKEA kitchen table kind of wobbles? I want you to go to your CD racks right now and take your Matchbox 20 CDs and level that table.
Yes.
Level the table. Right now.
Yeah,
Stop listening to us and go do it right now.
Exactly. Thank you, Josh. And while you're at it, take your Stroke CD and... Actually, you know what you should really do is just put it where it belongs in a big steaming pile of horse shit. And you know, that's, I just hate them so much. Even though, as I was forced to agree talking to Angie this weekend, I was forced to agree that the first album is not the worst thing on earth. I really hate them more for them, although their subsequent albums are turds, just like they are. So anyway, where are we? It's theme party. You know what, it's 10:58, but I think we should stick around and just enjoy ourselves for a few more minutes. I kind of want to play one or two more songs. I might actually play... This Is It one more time. I open the show with This Is It. I'm going to close the show with
This Is It. But hopefully this time he'll sing along.
Yeah. This Is It. I'll get the lyrics up and then I'll sing along. My Michael McDonald impression is gold.
Karaoke on theme party.
We need to bring karaoke back on theme party. I just
need to bring karaoke back. It's been out for too long. We need to make it in again.
No, you know what's depressing is I hosted karaoke for like 9 months. And all that happened was it succeeded in killing karaoke for me. I don't enjoy it at all anymore. I was like a karaoke artist. Back me up on this
one. And Ross probably was the greatest karaoke host I've ever seen.
Thank you. I was excellent. But I hosted at the worst bar in the whole world, or at least the most ridiculously mismanaged bar in the whole world. And you can only take like hosting karaoke in a bar that is frequented by ex-cons, career alcoholics, and... booze-addled, desperate housewives.
About us.
Yeah, exactly.
There were also some scary people there.
Yeah, like my female friends quit going because they would get hit on by crazy, like ultra-tattooed gangbangers, and get followed out to the cars and have their asses pinched. And the cops kept busting the bar like every other week. That was getting ridiculous. Like this time last year. Oh, go ahead. Does someone want to say something? Oh. Well, this time last year there was like a series of events. Like it rained. Do you remember when it rained last February? And
the place flooded?
Yeah. Mr. T's ceiling almost caved in. The place completely flooded. A couple weeks later, even more hilariously, we were actually in the middle of karaoke, and the cops showed up to bust the bar for violations of the tax code because they had a bunch of high-end liquor that they bought by the bottle, which you're not supposed to do. You have to buy from a licensed wholesaler, and you have to buy in bulk because it's supposed to... as far as I've been able to find out, those laws were passed to cut down on organized crime. Selling
not that organized crime had anything to do with the place we're talking about.
Oh, not at all. Are you
Russians? People dealing in cash only.
Yeah, no, it was completely legitimate bar. Let me tell you. Yeah, this is the kind of bar that it's in Highland Park. Which, if you're not in LA, Highland Park is like find the worst neighborhood that hip people still will go to, like college kids will still go to as well. Find the worst neighborhood in your city, like the kind of place that you can tell used to be really cool, but has now fallen way, way, way down on its luck.
We're not talking Kent here.
Yeah. find that place in your town. That's Highland Park. It is not Compton in the 80s. It's certainly not like Echo Park in the 80s. But it's getting really bad there.
And it's Riverwalk St. Louis. It's East Kansas City.
Yeah. You know, it's basically the kind of
Cabrini
place.
Cabrini Green of Chicago.
No, it's not as bad as Cabrini Green.
No, Cabrini now, not Cabrini. Oh, no, okay.
You realize that they're completely redoing Cabrini Green and they knocked it down. And
yeah, this is kind of where Highland Park is. It's still, they're trying so hard to make it a good neighborhood. They put the street signs in. They're trying to kick all that stuff out, but it's not quite there yet.
Yeah, and there's a whole lot of halfway houses there. So, like, and look, I do have a lot of sympathy for prisoners that get out of prison, you know, not for the crimes they commit, but, you know, you get out of prison, you paid your debt. But, man, there is no excuse for going to the bar. No matter how much you paid your debt in prison, you go to a bar, you get fucking drunk, you start a fight, you hit on, like, crazy girls, or not crazy girls, you hit on girls like you're crazy who will never talk to you, you creep everyone else out, and the bar won't do anything about this. Like, the owner of the bar's solution to the problem is like, I'll get some high-end drinks and I'll raise the drink prices. That'll really get the kids in here. It's like, no, no, no. First of all, career alcoholics will just pay extra. I mean, crackheads don't complain when the dealer raises prices. They just go and mug somebody. You know what I mean?
No, I think they do, in fact, complain.
Yeah, but they complain, and then they still go and mug somebody. This is the kind of bar that just thugs, and I don't mean like young thugs, but like old, aging thugs feel really comfortable.
Not thugs with a Z, but thugs with an S.
Yeah, feel really comfortable there. And nobody would go there, and it's not safe for girls. I tried to get him to give me a drink special. I really did. I was like, give me one beer that I can sell for $1.50. I'm like, The Roost sells $3 beers. You're selling $4.50, $5 beers. And you're selling Coors for $4.50, $5. What the fuck? He wouldn't give me a $2, $1.50 beer. He actually said, I don't want to get that kind of element in here. I'm like, okay, seriously, no one's coming to Highland Park for the fucking scotch. I promise you. So it was that for like months. I wasn't getting any support from the bar. I would no advertisement, that kind of thing. And I finally quit, and I discovered that I hate karaoke now. Sorry for boring you all with that.
It's very sad.
I know. A single tear is coming down my face right now.
Doesn't mean we can't have karaoke on theme party.
That's true.
And you are going to sing along to This Is It, right?
A couple of places I'll sing along to it. Let me find This Is It. Actually, I wanted to play I'm going to play two songs when we close. Song by Sparks. The song is called Change, and it's ridiculously good. And then I'm going to close with the second time tonight of hearing This Is It. And I think, does anyone have any final thoughts? JJ, I was really glad that you came to the show tonight, by the way. It was nice to meet you.
Thank you so much for having me.
You should come more often. Bring your guitar next time.
I will.
Awesome. JJ, do you have any concerts coming up soon by any chance?
Not at the moment, but when I find out, I'll let you know.
We'll do our best to help you along with that. We do actually know people who put shows on, and occasionally we have put
Please,
shows on.
Please, all bookers, contact Theme Party through the normal channels.
We do actually
it happen.
Theme Party's been involved with the production of shows from time to time as well, so we will see what we can do.
We know some people that know some people.
We do know some people.
That know some people.
That's what I'm talking about.
Beautiful.
So, well, thank you, JJ. What about you, DJ JetBlue? How you doing?
I'm doing good.
Glad to hear it.
Great show. Glad I got to talk some more tonight.
Me too. I'm glad you finally have my email address, by the way.
I had it. I just like MySpace better.
Yeah, I am not allowed to use MySpace for my job anymore. So, and that's the thing. It's pretty weird. But, you know, I guess it makes sense. A lot of people were abusing. I don't want to sound like a corporate.
I just have to ask, why is MySpace so damn addicting?
It's because it's like the internet in a box. I mean, it's got everything the internet normally has, like email and instant message and home pages and blogs and picture sharing. But it's all right there, all on one site.
I guess it's just too easy. I can't stay away.
MySpace can be kind of fun. And I just discovered a customizer that allows you to customize. Like, you can have more than like 8 in your hot list. And you can customize the pictures on it. I did mine tonight. And I just did it to test it out. So it doesn't look really that good yet. But my friend Osmani, he's made all his top 12 look like James Bond villains. And Matt Valines did Smooth Rockers of the 70s. Of course, my picture is now Michael McDonald. Just want to say.
You know, for anyone out there that doesn't speak our secret language, all they're hearing is nerd, 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 awesome.
I'd like to prefer to think geek, 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 geek.
Okay, we've had this conversation before. Geeks and nerds are part of the same genus. Okay. Actually, no. Geek, I think nerd is the genus and geek is a species within the genus, because nerd and geek is it's like rectangles and squares. The square is not a rectangle, but a rectangle is a square.
I just always define it as geeks have social skills and get laid, and nerds do
not.
No.
Geeks are people that freak out over particular things and become super experts in them. So we were geeking out just now.
Yes.
We were geeking out and nerding out.
Well, I'm going to geek out. I'll geek out for a second. So I heard they greenlighted a remake of Revenge of the Nerds. I think this is a really bad idea.
I agree.
I mean, there really are kind of no nerds anymore. I mean, there are geeks and there are dweebs, but nerds have kind of died out.
They have died out.
Yeah.
I agree.
There are still unpopular kids, but unfortunately, those guys are driven to shoot up their entire high school. So, believe me, I thought about it myself when I was there, so I can't exactly blame them.
I was actually, the other night, I was driving by Marshall High School, and there was a kid walking by in a full-length black trench coat. It's going to happen. If they're letting him dress like that, it can only lead to video games and violence.
Yeah, and video games. My God, you know what? Just the other day, I shot up a high school because of all the video games I play. No, what's
just
funny?
Just because somebody dresses in a full length.
He was being sarcastic. Okay. He was being sarcastic. That was irony.
Gotcha.
Yeah,
I put the C in facetious there.
Yeah, I think that you're in the wrong show to think that we're not going to be sympathetic to people who are picked on and downtrodden.
So.
When the Columbine thing happened, it sucks that those guys. It sucks that it happened. It sucks worse that those guys were racist assholes.
Yeah, so I slowed down, rolled down my window, and went, nerd! Yeah.
Ross, I know that you loved high school, and just...
Now look, I am proof that high school is not the end of the world, and that things will be better for you. But the point is, I learned that when I was in 10th grade. I mean, the problem for a lot of these kids is that they think that that's all there is, and you get... It's like being in prison. You become institutionalized. Yeah. It's like working for a corporation.
Which I will never do.
Now, believe me, you think you'll never do, but I'm going to play this song. We're going to go do our thing somewhere else. Ladies and gentlemen, we will be back next week with an all-new episode of Theme Party. Perhaps we'll have more guests. I would like to say a special goodbye to Angie. This may be her last. You'll be here next Friday, though, right?
I will be
okay,
here.
Okay, Angie may be back in Theme Party next week, but Angie's moving temporarily to Guatemala.
Costa Guatemala.
Guatemala.
I'm on a
Costa Rica obsession lately. The point I'm trying to make is that Angie is moving away from Los Angeles after a long time here, so I'm going to miss her. I think we'll all
miss her.
I'm going to miss myself.
I agree with you.
I want to give a final shout out to our guest who has been IMing from Kent,
yes.
Ellen of Tulsa, Chicago, Kent fame.
That was, Ellen will remember Josh Tupperville of also Tulsa fame. So, DJ Algonquin, I'm going to play this song now. It's Change by Sparks, followed immediately by the encore performance of This Is It by Kenny Loggins and Michael McDonald. And now here we go. By the way, you can email us at themeparty@gmail.com. Visit our MySpace account at myspace.com/themepartyradio. And that's all. Good night.
Like a dog that's been kicked out into the street. I know that dogs can't drive cars. That's about the only difference between us now. But wait, there's a rainbow across the freeway, and I think I feel the morning sun. Another sun is number one. Golden days have just begun. Change, every dog is gonna have his day. Change, every loser's gonna have his way. Change, I don't care what other people say.
You can argue all day long about whether love really exists or not. It's a complete waste of time. Like arguing about whether Santa Claus really exists or not. I got better things to do at my time. I got places that I've got to be,
and people that I have to see, mountains that I have to ski, golden days ahead of me.
change. Every dog is gonna have his day. Change. Every loser's gonna have his way. Change. I don't care what other people say. You know, I've been thinking we'll get back together again someday. Your hair will be some weird color by then. Maybe we'll just start off again as friends. I wonder when. Change. Every dog is gonna have his day. Change. Every loser's gonna have his way. Change. I don't care what other people say. Change. Just ignore them and they'll go away. Change.
Here by your side.